Hello, Governor.
Governor.
Hello, Governor.
How now, bro? Day,
how,
sir. Governor?
How now?
I got caught shoplifting at the Chevy dealership.
New York.
Good morning. Good morning.
San Diego.
San Diego. Scholars maintain the translation's been lost for years.
Years.
All right. 5, 4, 3. And this is episode 15 of a podcast without a name.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Tomorrow.
Hello.
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 Hello, this is episode 15.
Episode 15
I can't do accents.
Of a podcast without a name. Governor.
And I can't. I just can't do accents.
Shout out to our lovely... Shout out to our lovely jug band who does our promo, our intro music.
That's from, actually, we should be giving them credit. It's from bensound.com.
Nice.
It's royalty free, but he asked for credits and... We never give him credits.
There he is. So, it only took us 15 episodes to give him a good credit.
Yeah. I'll go back and throw him in our show notes.
Yeah.
But he's got some good stuff over there. I mean, one of my favorites is like this one. Yeah. And then there's...
That one always annoys the hell out of me.
That's like my second favorite.
So anyway,
here we are of the podcast without a name.
Yes,
we've gone 15 episodes. It seems like years.
I've been
almost.
In about four, and Anthony's... we're on episode 15.
Yes, this is true. So let's quickly get into like some breaking news.
Breaking news.
This just in. Donald Trump Jr. and Paul Manafort will testify at the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing next week.
Whoa.
That's so overwhelmingly breaking news. CNN will have this breaking for like 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah, but we're the first breaking, right?
Yeah. We are the first ones to say breaking news for this.
Yeah.
And CNN will do it the next 10 million times.
Well, because they're going to copy off of the podcast without a name. That's what
of
they
course,
do.
Naturally.
That's what they always do.
That's how we get clicks. Yeah. We just say breaking news and put like a breaking news.
So,
or I can't do the CNN thing. Anyway.
It was postponed, right? It was rescheduled.
This was a rescheduling of whatever they were supposed to do today. The last agenda, I don't think ever had them on there because this no one cared, right? Like, so this, their names on the agenda is what is new and interesting.
Well, the
obviously.
Name changed. There's a new title, yeah, correct?
Oh, I didn't even look at the title.
The hearing for yeah. the oversight of the Foreign Agents Registration Act and attempts to influence U.S. elections, : lessons learned from current and prior administrations.
Prior administrations. Yes. Well, I mean, it's on the agenda. Whatever they want to call it, I don't care. But it should be interesting, right? You got Donald Trump Jr. going to be... I don't know if it's going to be an open hearing or a closed hearing. I think it's going to be open. Every time I've looked at the agendas, they've always been open. I don't know if the agendas for closed ones are known until afterwards or something. I don't know. But I think this might be open. So that should be, I think it's going to be pretty interesting because can't you imagine like some of these senators who like have the chance to question Donald Trump Jr.?
Yeah.
And I mean, Paul Manafort, too, whatever. But it's Donald Trump Jr. is going to be like, you know, there's going to be so many trying to get like, I gotcha type of questions.
No, there's no.
And well, that's kind of the MO for Senate, regardless of who's in, you know, Democrat or Republican, that they try to get you, you know. But I think Donald Trump Jr. is a little bit more slick than his father. I mean, the bar's really low.
Yeah. He didn't. It's not like he came out on like a Twitter account, like, you know. Put all of the emails on there.
Well, we talked about that, right? I think there is a strategy behind that, and I think it's a legitimate one. I think legally it was probably, you know, his lawyers probably shit themselves, but I think I'm fine with, like, I think it's I don't think that's really a reflection of you know, him being naive or something. I think he was really just trying to get ahead of it, tell you the truth.
Yeah, no, I get that. And we did definitely talk about that episode 14 podcast without name.
Yeah, yeah, go back and watch it. Or listen to it.
Go watch it.
You can watch it technically.
Very boring. Watch the one mute.
Yeah, you can just watch the podcast without a name, logo just moving across the screen somewhere.
Logo. Sorry, Luke. So, yeah, so it will, for anybody who wants to be there for it, one thing that I noticed was funny on the tabloid or article that I read, it shows like the scheduled date, time, room, office.
Oh yeah, gives you everything.
But it's amazing though to think about like high profile people, like, you know.
And there is actually, you know what, come to think of it, the website I think has a video feed that says it'll air when it starts.
And that's cool.
It's video of the hearing.
You know, will there, you know.
So that probably, I mean, I would venture to
protesters. We're like, here.
Yeah, here you go.
Everybody.
Well, I bet this will be open then. I think it would be if they have a feed in here and stuff. So that should be interesting. It should be. I'm going to try my best to have it live stream for us, like I did with the Comey testimony.
Yeah.
I'll do my best to do it for us. And we had a bunch of people watch it, so it was a little bit of a service to some people. So I'll try. We'll see. Sometimes like work gets in the way. And
Joe's also our IT department, for anybody that didn't know.
Yes. Yeah, our IT department, marketing department.
Bob's in marketing.
Yeah, Bob's marketing, and I'm still upset with him.
Yeah.
But, you know.
We were talking around the water cooler the other day, and Bob gave me some crazy news. We'll have that breaking news in episode 16. Come listen to us.
Breaking news. Keep everyone on.
Who were the friggin' ad wizards that came up with that one?
You know, I didn't talk about what I'm drinking today. I'm drinking Weissenbach, my schmuck. I'm back to German beers now.
Okay.
Yeah, this is going to be bad news.
Richard?
Anthony, what are you having?
Anthony?
Hello?
Did we lose you, Anthony?
I lost Richard.
Oh, you lost Richard. Richard was wondering what you're having this evening.
Oh, today I'm having the Torpedo IPA from Sierra Nevada.
Well, that sounds very uppity of you.
No.
That is a very flavorful yet bitter beer. I enjoy it.
Yes. It's a great beer, very hoppy if you're in the mood for hops, but very enjoyable. It's very good.
I'm drinking Narragansett, which is the beer drunk by the immortal Captain Quint in Jaws.
Hmm. Oh, man.
It's delicious. You
can do their best Jaws theme song impression. I can't. I can't do it. I'm like offbeat when I do it. Like,
I could do that part.
Oh boy. So anyway, I think we've gotten past the Donald Trump and Paul Manafort thing with the Senate segment.
I was just going to say, I think it's going to be interesting to see a Trump under questioning. But other than that, you know, it's more of, hey, I got to wait to see if anything happens because you're just getting beat over the head with all this Russia collusion.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Stuff.
Well, you know, I think that whole meeting with Donald Trump Jr. and the Russian lawyer and stuff, I think, you know, at least I'm of the opinion that it puts a little bit of meat on the bone for everything. And there was some other stupid little things that came out after that with like the eighth man in the room, or was it an interpreter or something that they want to question that person. I still maintain it still puts a little meat on the bone, but I still think the large majority, that's kind of like redundant, but most of this stuff is stupid and not worth running down. But that puts a little bit of meat on the bones, makes you perk up a little bit. But I still, you know, I'm going to let the investigators do their thing. I'm going to let special prosecutor kind of do their thing.
And I'm sure this isn't the first time that he's ever been deposed deposed? Deposition. So I'm sure it's really not the first time he's ever, you know, had to give statements. So I'm sure he knows how to handle himself in that way. So it should be interesting. I'm sure he's very knowledgeable on what he can and can't say. And I'm sure he's paying a lot of people a lot of money to tell him what he can and can't say. So
yeah,
I really don't think there's going to be any bombshells that come out, you know, in that line of questioning.
I don't think so either. Like I alluded to earlier, I think Donald Trump Jr. is a little bit more sharp than senior. I think if, you know, Donald Trump got out there, that would be just like, man, get your popcorn, because that would be a field day. But I think he'll be a little bit more tactful with how he speaks. And who knows, maybe he'll prove me wrong and just flop and we'll have a whole nother slew of headlines. I think there'll be a slew of headlines regardless. But
or this could be a very boring, unewsworthy committee hearing.
It could be.
Because you don't have President Trump talking. I wonder, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe Mr. Donald Trump Jr. will, be a little bit more reserved and not quite tabloid.
He could plead the fifth.
Yeah.
That'll put a stick in the spokes, because that would have all, oh man, I could see Washington Post right now, like, oh, phew. Donald Trump Jr. pleads the fifth. He's a Nazi. Like easy. Right in there. Like,
well, honestly, he could say everything or say nothing, and he'd still,
be a Nazi.
There'd still be some sort of tabloid that would come out for it.
Do you think he'll get up there and be like, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth?
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Come up with a whole little, like, dance ensemble, you know?
Donald Trump Jr. claims executive privilege.
Yeah.
And he murdered 1 million puppies.
Like, yeah. He hates babies too, I think, is what I got from it. Yeah.
Anyway, we can move on from this, because that's like, this is like a reoccurring, like, I thought about the other day, we should have some sort of reoccurring segment, and it seems like we have one. It's called Trump Russia. So,
yeah.
We'll just move on from that.
It makes me have a whole new level of respect for the people on CNN that have to get up there every day and talk about the same thing for like hours at a time.
You're right. Yeah.
And if they don't talk about it, they get fired.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Or if they make shit up, they get fired. That happened recently too.
Sometimes.
Yeah, only sometimes. It's kind of like them just throwing a bone to people. Like, oh, look, we do fire people who make stuff up. Sometimes. Dot, dot, dot. Healthcare. I don't know if it's flop number 2 or number 3, but it appears that the Republicans cannot get shit done.
Well, it's like flop number 3 technically, right? But flop number 2 absolutely, and flop number 3 with not getting any support for a total repeal.
Yeah. And
I think this whole thing's been a flop.
Well, that's funny. You guys know my take on this. I think it's just that slow march to a single payer situation. And I think Republicans are spineless in all of this. I don't think they have enough balls, if you will, or whatever, if they're females, boobs or something, to say, to just go out and say, I want a free market solution. I, for some reason, they're hanging on this metric of, we want the most amount of people insured as possible. And, is that real? What does that mean? Like, no one really knows what that means. Well, forcing people to be insured, is that really achieving like quality healthcare access to everyone? Like, well, if you're forcing people to be insured, and their deductibles are, $8,000 and they're paying $800 a month, well, they don't have insurance. You could check them off as being insured, but they don't have insurance, and for all intents and purposes. But,
well, I mean, the funny thing is, like, Donald Trump realizes that all of this is failing at this point, right? So he's, he even put out there like that he wants to just see if Obamacare fails and move on to tax reform and kind of, I think he's realizing that without the bipartisan support, at least a little bit of it, he's not getting anything, moving forward. You know what I mean? Like, and I mean, I don't know. The fact that it's failed, coming up on 3 times, I feel like we're heading to a point where it's like, are they just grasping at straws trying to get something?
Well, I think you're right with the GOP side of this. They're just trying to say that they repealed Obamacare when it's really not a repeal at all. And then you have Trump sitting there going, well, we should just let it fail, right? Like, First off, Trump has been sporadic or I guess the best way is schizophrenic with his tweets about this. Like, one minute he wants it to fail. One minute he's like, everyone's got to pass this. We got to appeal it. We got to replace it. Yeah. And I don't think anyone, like, what? How do we define fail, right? Let's be real here. Like, is there someone in a room somewhere and says, I am the authority for what is failing in this country. It is not failed until I declare it. Like, is there some dude that's just like, well, it has failed.
No, there's actually a technical thing that was installed in the Oval Office, and it's a failometer.
Failometer
is that what they look at? Yeah, and once it gets to a certain level, then there it's like all the alarms go off, and they're like, "Oh my God, it failed!
Oh, this is what happened.
It failed bigly."
Does it say epic fail?
Yeah, I think they have. Oh. It is an epic fail.
But the way that Obamacare and I'm just. Listen, I was listening to Rand Paul had a little live stream today about healthcare, and he said that in Obamacare there's pretty much provisions to like to where there's a bailout essentially of the insurance companies if they're saying that, you know, they're not making enough profits or that something is not as you know, they're not in a position to, you know, stay in business or succeed or whatever like that. So there's provisions in there to where the government essentially would bail them out. And he said before Obamacare, the insurance companies or something made a profit of like $9 billion a year. Mm-hmm. And after Obamacare now, because the government is like subsidizing costs for them, something like their profits after Obamacare was like $15 billion
a year. So they're rent seeking at this point. That's what they're doing. Just like student loans.
And he's like, well, why would I want to pad their profits? He's like, that doesn't make any sense to me. He said, so, you know, the government shouldn't be in the business of, you know, making sure businesses succeed. They should have to come up with their own model to succeed.
So essentially it can't fail per se. It just can become unsustainable. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. So because they were having to take on people that they were having to insure people that were already sick and stuff. So everybody's premiums were going up and they're saying, hey, this is not profitable for us. And the government's kind of right. We're going to put money towards, you know,
it pretty much highlights this concept of when Donald Trump tweets that, oh, we're going to let it fail and we're going to make the Democrats come to the table. He doesn't know what he's talking about because it's not going to fail. It's just going to become unsustainable. It's going to be propped up as long as it can until something else happens. And I think that something else has always been meant to be single payer. And I just don't see Republicans having the guts to say, I want a free market solution. They can't get away. They've bought into the metric of if you're not insured, then it's a failure. It's not worth it, right? Like
I didn't mean to cut.
No, that's good. That was good.
I was just going to say because the backlash is when they say this, then you get people on the news videos of some guy in a wheelchair going, if I don't have my insurance, you're signing my death warrant. I'm going to die if you take my insurance away. And it's not that they're taking insurance away. A real free market solution, the goal would be anyway for prices, premiums, insurance plans to go down because there would be more choice. There would be, you'd be able to purchase insurance across state lines. So it would make it more affordable for everyone.
You know what's funny about all this? We kind of talk about this. If Obamacare goes away, there's like this like voodoo of, oh my God, people are going to die, right? So before 2015, it went into full effect or something like that? Or was it before that? I forget when it was. But anyway, like, people weren't dying on the streets. People were getting covered. They were getting, like, it was like the fringe that really needed their skill. Like, we all agreed that there was some sort of reform that needed to be done, but there was not some sort of epidemic or something of people just dying because they didn't have healthcare coverage. Like,
I think, you know, that you had the far right saying that we need a total repeal. You had the far left saying that we need to sustain this, you know, as much as possible. And, you know, talking about anything going away from that idea would be, you know, signing people's death sentences, you know what I mean? Like, you know, but the reality of it is, when it comes to insurance, you know, at all, any sort of insurance reform or, you know, whatever is already out there, mm-hmm. it works, right? Yeah. It does what it's supposed to do. It just has certain issues, I guess, that underlie it. Whereas, you know, really, the old system had it. Obamacare has its own issues. Yeah. Any reform of it after that fact will have its own issues. Coming up with a real bipartisan, agreed, lobbyist-less, yeah, to make up my own word. You know, because think about this too, right? Like, I remember when Obamacare was first put out, right? Obama's, like, original healthcare plan was actually okay. Like, it wasn't, like, in my opinion, at least. It wasn't until they had a lot of trouble pushing it out, where a lot of lobbyists came in to play and said, look, I'll help you push this and get support if you add line, you know, 10,037. I wanted to say that, I don't know, wood-burning fireplaces are going to be outlawed in your house or whatever. Like a lot of people started putting a lot of different verbiage inside of this bill, and it went to kind of, it diluted it really, and it went to shit, and it wasn't what it was supposed to be. But then he was so hell bent on getting it out there that it was like, okay, we'll take on whatever the hell we need to do to get support, you know, to get it out, yeah, there. And, you know, really what we need is a clean bill. I mean, I think, don't quote me on this, but I think that the original Obamacare, you know, bill was actually like 100 pages long, and by the end of like the whole lobbyist thing that went into it, it was like over 1,000 pages long.
Let's be real though, like, and this is Nancy Pelosi's words, like, and paraphrased, read it after you vote for it. So no one's really reading it, and it didn't matter. And at the end of the day, whether it's lobbyist influencing or not, these politicians who were in control at the time, they're the only ones to blame for it. Like, we could sit here and say a lobbyist got an influence, but they're the assholes that let them do it, right? And the first Obamacare was not bipartisan in any way, shape, or form. In any part of the process, it was pushed through without Republican input or anything, or votes, or not one vote at all. It was pushed through, and you know what? If Republicans had a spine, they would do the same thing back. And then, you know what? If they had a better idea.
Yeah, but does that actually help anything, though?
Well, like, yeah, it does, you know, because if they believe in what they're saying, then it should turn out better. Like, in 4 or 5 years, we're not going to see, now, based on their ideal of how it would go, we shouldn't see, you know, crazy forced health care of $8,000 deductibles and $900 premiums, right? Like, you should be able to go, well, look, we could do this or do that now. Like, so the thing is, they, and maybe this is where I agree with, where I buy into the fact that they can't necessarily just repeal back to what it was pre-Obamacare, because you were at a point where you can't just go back to that. As much as I think it's not going to be the end of the world, you can't go back, because there was a reason why we were pushing for healthcare reform to begin with. And sure, so you're going to have to present an alternative that is better. And I don't necessarily mean like an Obamacare light either. I mean, you have to push for the free market solution, but the real free market solution, things that me and Rich have talked about, and even you have talked about in the past.
You know, really, honestly, what it comes down to, though, Joe, is, you know, we all know this with everything, not just healthcare, but healthcare is a real big issue, right? But, you know, so it's more, you know, valid of an argument, I guess. But at the end of the day, like, every single thing that a Democrat wants to push through is not going to get the Republican support. And everything that the Republicans want to push through is not going to get Democrat, just for the sake of saying the other side is wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we're seeing is, you know, we had that with Obamacare. I feel like, and now we have it now again with Trump, although I feel like he's just throwing shit out there just to kind of see if something sticks. At this point, I don't even know if he knows what he's talking about anymore. But, you know, the thing is, for something as important as healthcare, I feel like both sides really should come up with some way that they can kind of come to some sort of compromise and come out with a bill that isn't about, you know, hey, this is the Democrat bill, or hey, this is the Republican bill. Like, just something that helps the actual public at this point. And I don't feel like we're there, and I feel like we're straying even farther away from that.
I think you're right in regards to the concept of they need to come together and come up with a bill, because the Democrats have won the argument of government needs to be involved in some way, shape, or form heavily shaping our healthcare system, right? And the Republicans have bought into that with, you know, buying into the different metrics and the different variables of how we measure success for healthcare. So you're right. If we're gonna go down this path and we don't want to go to single payer, it's gonna have to be a bipartisan situation. And we're it's gonna be this hybrid thing, and it's probably not gonna work in the long run, because I still maintain.
I mean, do you believe that Republicans want to go to single payer?
I think if you listen to some of them, and to include Trump, who's not a real conservative Republican, but I mean, Trump even talked about and alluded to a single payer scenario, right? And I don't know if Republicans are thinking, like, this is why I think they're spineless. I think they're just worried about being reelected. And I don't think that they're really thinking that in depth about it. Like, what does it mean? How do we really do this? What do we need to do? What do I need to stand for? What are my values here in terms of the system I think that will work in the long term and sustainable? I'm not sitting here and saying it was single payer is wrong, right? But we are a country that is built on a foundation of capitalism. We haven't had a pure capitalist society. So my argument is, let's try that route, because it got us where we are. We are the best country. We're the greatest country and empire to ever be in this world. Grace this earth, right? So let's give that a shot. Let's use that framework for healthcare, because we really haven't ever really had that framework. It's always been heavily government orchestrated, if you will. And it's, let's open it up. Let's make this, you know, let's turn this into as close to a free market as possible. And I will concede that I understand that we need to keep some sort of, there's going to have to be some sort of government touch on it, right? I understand that. Like, I'm not a complete libertarian. Well,
I mean, there always is going to be. I get that. I don't mean to interrupt you, but my issue with single payer is, you know, idealistically, right? You know, any universal healthcare idealistically is a great idea, right? And I get that, man. And single payer is a great idea idealistically, you know, but, you know, no matter what we read online with all these memes and everything that go around it, like, you know, just from my personal experience and talking to people, you know, family that we have in Italy and in Germany and stuff like that, like, you know, the universal thing doesn't really work exactly. And there's a lot of different variables that play into it. I'm not saying I'm opposed to it if a good plan were to come about it, but it can't repeat the same stuff that happens in Europe and things of that nature. But with that said, like, I feel like the push is for this, you know, we want everybody to just, all right, look, I've seen pensions over the course of my career, you know, go to, I basically have my own savings plan for work 100% for my retirement, because I get a pension through my work. However, I don't believe that by the time I retire, it's even going to be there anymore. Social Security, I mean, all of these things are very much things that, like, in 30 to 40 years from now might not even be anything anymore. And we've seen the destabilization of these programs. And single payer, to me, is just another one of those programs. It sounds good. It may work for a little bit and then not be sustainable in 20 years from now. And everybody's just kind of back where we are again. Now I say, like, find a plan, fix it now, not put in some sort of, plan to just kind of get us by for like 10 or 20 years. You know what I mean? Like, fix it now and have something that's going to be sustainable through the course of this generation's careers. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, let me be able to retire in 30 years from now with, you know, having healthcare that entire time, you know what I mean? While somehow taking care. I believe that there's a way out there. Yeah. I believe that there's a plan out there that could work. I believe that most of the issues that come about with not being able to come up with an idea is because of just pure stubbornness between the two parties. Yeah. I, I, I don't mean to vent, but I hate this two-party system. I hate it because it just causes more digression than anything else. Yeah,
and
honestly,
to add on
anyway,
to your
off my soapbox, I apologize.
To add on to your optimism of you know, this concept of, I know that there's something out there. I know we can get to. You know what? We've done everything better, right? We've done everything better than every other empire to grace the earth, right? And so we could do this better, in my opinion. Like you know, maybe it is our unique political structure. It is the disposition of our, populace. I don't know what it is, but we, for some reason, we found that mix or that formula to do things better than any other empire has ever been able to do. So why can't we do this better, right?
Well, I think there's a little bit to be said about this. I mean, first of all, I've said this before. I think it has to go all the way either way. I think it either has to go single payer or it has to go complete capitalist free market solution. I don't think these hybridizations of the two work.
I agree.
It's just they're at odds with each other. I mean, the way that we had insurance set up before really wasn't all that great. Obamacare included more people in the market to be insured, but that caused the premiums and things like that for everybody else to go up, and it caused its own set of problems.
Yeah.
So I think you either have to have a single payer system or you have to have, you know, a free market capitalist sort of free for all. Let's roll back regulation and kind of see what happens to drive prices down so that more people can be insured.
And I would agree with that with you. And we've agreed on this in the past, right? And my foundation for that is, like, I think I would venture to say that someone on the left would say, we've tried your way, it failed, we're doing single payer. I would say, let's give a real free market solution a chance because we haven't done that yet in reality. Let's break down some barriers. Let's put some cost controls in terms of transparency to the patients and stuff. Like, what are they getting themselves into when they go, when a doctor sticks a wooden thing down their throat to check their throat, you know? Like, let's get that stuff under control. Let's open up the market and let's see how that shakes out. Let's give the market, let's challenge the market and industry to say, make this be something that is worthwhile. Otherwise, you might lose it.
Well, let's say this though. I mean, this can go a couple different ways. I mean, when you, we see what happens in, socialist societies and things like that. When they just arbitrarily set prices for things, you know, the market doesn't, you know, the market can't function because there's no,
there's no predictability. There's no, you can't do a business model around that.
Right. But on the other hand, when you do the free market capitalist solution, it sounds great. But the market, as you know, is not a stable thing. Things fluctuate. Yep. There's bubbles. Things burst. So, I mean, stability wise, and Anthony was saying we need something that'll last for a lifetime. The projections in that kind of a thing, you know, free market capital, it's like quarter to quarter. They're like quarterly projections or at most maybe projections for a year. Now you talk about a socialist solution or a single payer solution, that's going to require more long-term planning, you know, but at the same time, it's going to require a lot more manpower. You're going to have to hire more bureaucrats, and there's going to be more people that aren't really elected to offices. They're just appointed there, and then they're going to have sway over essentially your life and death. And I mean, you know,
I hate to use the phrase slippery slope, but it's kind of a little bit of that.
Well,
I was going to say that. Yeah.
I think one of the main barriers to entry into a very good healthcare system is basically the inability to actually educate the public about what each plan really requires. Okay. So, you know, you hear all now, I will preface this by saying the whole Trump care thing is a ridiculous circus. I mean, I think, in my opinion, it's a circus right now. makes no sense. Half the stuff that he's putting out there is just like, let me throw enough mud on the wall and see what sticks kind of stuff. But one of the things that you hear often is, you know, it's going to leave, you know, 20 million Americans, you know, out of healthcare and blah, blah. You hear all these negative things, right, about who it's going to leave uninsured and whatever. And they look at the Affordable Care Act as this all-encompassing perfect system, because that's all they know, that's all they hear about on the media. Yeah. When in reality, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure the ACA was going to basically, there was still going to be about like 30 million Americans that were going to be required to buy their own private insurance, which technically, well, by the terms of government insurance, leaves them uninsured, right? Unless they subsidize it.
There's one thing that we're somehow avoided all this, that I believe it's 79% of our country of insurable people are covered under their employee insurance programs. So what we're debating here is only about like 20 to 30% of our society.
Yes.
Like, we can't ignore it, but realize that that's what talking about here. And you know,
I got a father and a mother. They're retired. I've seen, you know, my uncle, you know, God bless him, he passed away a couple of years ago, but he really struggled with, you know, with Medicare when he was struggling with cancer and stuff like that. I see, you know, what these things do, just as everybody has their own story. And you know, we can see the fallacies of each of these, you know, healthcare systems, you know what I mean? And there are things that do need to be fixed and absolutely, but I don't think it needs to be rushed where it's like, look, this is like, it's gotta be now. I feel like, listen, like, take your time. Think about it. We're not talking about a 2,000 employee company here. We're talking about, you know, what's our population? 350 million.
Yeah, it's like 315 like, or 310 million or something like that.
Right. You're talking over three. Well, one way or another, you're talking hundreds of millions of people in this country that you're trying to, you know, run as a business technically, right? You're running it as a company technically. The president is the president of that company, right?
323 million people. Go on.
323. So, you know, you're looking at trying to find the perfect medium for all of these people, and the multitude of you know, ideas and idealisms and, you know, just straight up opinions of everybody is going to, you know, vary from region to region, state to state, person to person. You know what I mean? There's like almost like an infinite amount of, you know, ideas that people are going to have here. So like, what brings you closest to, you know, making everybody happy, right? Well, we don't know, because I don't feel that anybody's ever really given it enough time to really figure it out, right? Like, I mean, I feel that if they took their time, they did get some bipartisan support, and you know my opinion on any bipartisan anything. If they gave it some bipartisan support, sat down, talked about it, and worried less about their politics and more about the healthcare, I think that they could come up with a really good plan moving forward.
Good way to stop that. Let's move on, just because we're getting close here to our time limit. I wanted to talk about Brett Weinstein, or if you're in Germany, Weinstein.
Weinstein.
I don't know if you guys heard about this situation. I sent it over in our show notes beforehand. Anthony thought it was really interesting. I don't know. And Rich had caught it on Joe Rogan's podcast, so I think he's familiar with this. But Brett Weinstein is a professor at Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. And he has recently come on, well, recently as in like, I think it was like a couple months ago now, coming to some shit in his college, which is a kind of, it's a very interesting story, because Evergreen State College is a very, very liberal university to begin with, right? Not unlike many other universities, but they are like the model, you know, liberal far left university. And he is, he's like some high science. I forget what he's like, some sort of like evolutionary theorist or something like that. But he's super smart. Dude is smart, very intellectually smart, but he is also a very left person. Like, he historically has been kind of that poster boy for the left. Like, if this the situation, which we'll talk about in a minute, didn't happen, I'm just setting the stage here. It's very possible that, you know, 6 months ago we would be talking about him as the regressive left. That's how left this guy is, right? Well, it turns out that one day the black students on campus had a tradition where they would, you know, a day without blacks, they called it. And it was an annual thing. And they would just one day, black students would not show up on campus for whatever it is, whether it's working or classes. And it was just, you know, some sort of, you know, activist thing, or, you know, let people know what it would be like without minorities or that particular minority group on their campus. And this past year, they came up with this idea of, we're going to have a day without whites. And the black students came up with this idea and said, it's not going to be an option. We're going to make it. We're going to say you cannot be on campus if you're white. And they expanded that to anyone that's not black. So Asians and stuff like that weren't allowed on campus too. And the professor responded to the email that went out from the group. There was a particular group. I don't know if it was like the Black Caucus or whatever it might be.
The Black Delegation. The
Black Delegation. I don't even know what it was. But it was whatever the you know, African-American group was on campus had sent out a school-wide email. And he responded with a very thoughtful email. And I was going to pull it up and read it, but I'm not going to. I'll just put it in notes. But essentially what he said was, I'm not going to do this because it goes against the whole concept of what you're trying to push, or at least you think you're trying to push. It's like, it's a different thing. It's one thing to, you know, be a group and to make a point by not have, like, I voluntarily saying, I'm not going to be here to make my point that you need us, right? For whatever reason. It's another thing to force others to say, like, you can't be there. Right. And his argument was that's kind of working against what you're trying to do. And they immediately labeled him racist and alt-right. And it became this situation where he was like, I mean, they were chanting and protesting outside of his. I have some clips I'll bring it up. But it was like, it's cannibalism, right? At the minimum. But it's just so wild because now this professor who, I mean, he's now become like the poster child of free speech. And he's gone on all, I mean, the only news outlets that care to cover this are the more conservative leaning news broadcasts. And sure. So he's been on Joe Rogan. I mean, Joe Rogan's not conservative, but he probably as of late has been probably more to the right, but, Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson, I mean, he's been on the Ben Shapiro has covered him, you know, and then you have, you know, the podcast that what's his name?
Ruben Report.
Ruben Report had him on and his brother. I mean, he's getting all the where else was it? He was on like a ton of different more right leaning websites and stuff. Yeah.
Sorry. No. I can't help but feel like but think of. This is like the perfect case study for like social and like I actually kind of like really enjoyed reading about this, even though it's very disturbing at the same time, if that makes any sense. But like when you look at what's going on in our country as a macro society, right? And we all can agree that in university level, you have some sort of like little micro society, right? Mm. That somewhat is relative to the macro, you know. Right? But it's a little bit more liberal leaning because of what's taught and you know, the type of people and the type of conversations and the demographic and the age groups, you know what I mean? Yeah. But with all of that said, it's interesting to watch something like this happen where it's almost like a closed sample study, mm-hmm. right? Of, you know, people, children, young adults, let's just say, that have come up with these ideas and how they perceive what should and shouldn't happen and how they want to make things happen or not make things happen. It's like a little case study built into this university, and it's very interesting. It's very interesting because I think it really reflects what we see a lot of on the media. Now, I will tell you this. I don't think it actually reflects what really exists nationwide for our entire populace.
Gets to Greece, that's what it's reflecting.
Yeah, but I do see that it reflects exactly what the media has been portraying as what is our reality right now. Yeah, and socially.
I have
and it's interesting to think about that, you know. So you're looking at, you know, I see this like all the time. If I say anything that mm-hmm. goes against anything that one of these protester groups say, I'm considered a racist. Yeah. Right? And you guys know. I don't know if our listeners know. I mean, you guys both know that I'm the opposite.
You are
of that,
the
right?
most so like, racist person. You know what? Actually, you know what? You're not racist. No. You're anti-racist.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so racist that I'm racist against racism, you know, is where I'm at.
So yeah. I have a clip here of Brett Weinstein. He's giving a statement to the Board of Trustees of Evergreen State College. And in this, it kind of outlines it all too. So this will be informational for the people listening in terms of what is going on. And it'll also kind of embody the point we're trying to make.
I'm a faculty member here. Let me say, I think you probably all know that I've tried to reach the board privately so that I could discuss what I believe I know has taken place on this campus with you, not in a public forum. And that has come to nothing, so I find myself talking to you here. I also know people who know you all personally, and I'm told and I believe that you are all well-intentioned and that you have the best interests of the institution at heart. And the problem is that knowing that about you and knowing what I do about what's taken place here, I'm forced to conclude that you must not fully understand what has happened, because if you did fully understand what has happened, you would be forced to act in the interest of Evergreen. So in that light, I want to just simply pose some questions to you about things that I think you need to know that perhaps you don't. Do you know that the college descended into literal anarchy and that for days the campus was not under the control of the state? It was under the control of protesters. That there were assaults, there were batteries, there was pressure not to report crimes to the police. People were, by the legal definition, I believe, kidnapped and imprisoned. That included faculty members and administrators. Others were hunted on the campus. That lawless bands roamed the campus unimpeded. Police were physically and intentionally blocked by protesters. Police were cruelly, systematically, and personally taunted. They were humiliated and forced to stand down by the president. Students that held different opinions were, by the protesters' own analysis, stalked, harassed, and doxxed, meaning that their names, pictures, and addresses and phone numbers were distributed online. Do you know that concessions made under intimidation and threat during the protest are now being enacted by the college? That includes mandatory bias training for all faculty. This has come about by an agreement between the faculty union, the administration, and protesters. It was not discussed with the faculty. The student code of conduct is now being revised in response to demands by those in violation of that very code. Do you know that although the code of conduct is supposed to protect all of us, that Dr. Bridges decided to selectively suspend it, giving some students license to threaten others based on their participation in the protest? Do you know that the Equity Council, only 25% of which are active faculty, exceeded its charge by proposing a revamp of our college hiring process? That it sought to force the college's acceptance of its sweeping proposal, that it constructed the proposal to limit faculty autonomy, this is by the admission of members of the council within a faculty meeting, and that it wished to avoid discussion with the faculty, that was also admitted in a faculty meeting by a member of the council. You know that we as a faculty never discussed the equity proposal. That was despite the clear hazard it poses to the college's ability to remain solvent. Do you know that the equity proposal is predicated on a quantitative analysis that finds equity gaps, but the analysis cannot withstand scrutiny and would likely be considered fraud if presented in a scientific paper? That it was challenged internally and that critics were silenced? Did you say my time is up? That the flawed analysis makes the remedies that have been proposed effectively permanent, and that the council knows this, one of its chairs having said during the rollout that equity at Evergreen cannot be achieved. It must be perpetually pursued. I guess my time's up. Sure.
His time is up. Meanwhile, Anthony's bike was taken over by his wife and I guess one of her friends.
That was, she had the longest tongue I've ever seen in my life.
That was pretty funny.
I was Gene Simmons.
I couldn't like wave to them and like make faces, but it was funny. Anyway, that was Brett Weinstein.
The whole thing with this, I think, is that it goes to show that the left, and we saw in the last election, is starting to be controlled by this very small yet very vociferous group of people that have very radical thinking. And because they're so loud and they're so obnoxious in what they have to say, people give them attention. So it really is a case of, you know, the left, like, eating their young. Like, they'll eat each other. It reminds me of the quote in the Batman movie where, you know, the Joker's like, don't talk like one of them. You're not, even if if you'd like to be, you know? You know, like, these civilized people, they'll eat each other. Like, that's exactly what is happening.
It really is, because, I mean, this man, like, he is a smart guy. And he's just trying to do what's right. And he's just trying to do, he's sticking to his principles. He probably started doing this with the best of intentions to say, listen, I'm going to respond back to you with my opinion and I'm going to give you my take on this because I think you guys got off track here with what our liberal values or progressive values might be. And it completely just like, man, it was like whole nother level he pushed him to. It was something he couldn't even think about. And this man is a smart man, you know, like he didn't even foresee this happening. And he laid it out really well, all the consequences of it, and it like, it's crazy. I mean, it really is a crazy situation. But I believe we've come to the end.
Oh no!
Oh, here comes Anthony, just in time to say bye. It's okay. It's okay because.
Hey guys, sorry.
It's okay.
Your wife and her friend were saying hi. Your wife's friend has the longest tongue I've ever seen in my entire life. It's like Gene Simmons-esque.
Yeah, well, you know, that's how we roll here on podcast. But I need.
Anyway, Anthony, you missed our last little thing about, you know, how crazy this is.
I apologize. I was having technical difficulties.
It's okay. Anyway, we're about 50 minutes or so of this podcast, so Melissa is going to be very upset with us.
Yes. Melissa!
No! Please! Please don't be upset.
Melissa, please!
Well, Joe, did you tell everybody where they can
find us? Yes, they can find us on Facebook at The Podcast Without a Name, on Twitter at No Name Podcaster. You can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spreaker, and a million other places. SoundCloud. Did I say SoundCloud? Did I say that? I don't remember if I did. But maybe SoundCloud. And a bunch of other places. I just added us to a few other places this past week. That's where you can find us. Jump on Facebook because that's the best place to actually interact with us if you want to talk with us. But I'm always on Twitter trolling around, so we can do some trolling together if you're interested.
All right.
We might have a live stream after this, but catch our live streams. If you didn't know, every time we record a podcast, we do a live stream afterwards. You may start seeing that as a recurring thing for us. It may happen this evening. We'll see. We'll talk about it. Rich is like rocking out right now.
It really is.
Rich,
FTW, Rich. We're seeing your tattoos here.
Fuck the world, bro. Oh.
I thought it was for what that's worth. I thought that's
for what that's worth.
I guess that would not have a W in there. We'd be like skipping a W.
I think it stands for for the wiener.
For the wiener.
I tell my aunt who's a nun. I say it's for the win or free the whale.
All right, Rich, you have the last word.
Free the whale.
Rich, you have the last word.
You see what a couple of guys with some beers and a few microphones can do.